Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, January 6th. I'm Ray Graff. Today on the program, we have two computer experts on the line to answer your tech questions. Tony Yang is the operator of Albany-based Gig Computers, which currently manages the computer network here at WAMC. Also with us, Mark Bogosian, owner and operator of Castle Mac Service in Latham. So whether you got a PC or a Mac or an Android or an iPhone, we got some guys who can give you some answers. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email your question to voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Tony, Mark, and your computer calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today, here to answer your computer and tech questions, Tony Yang and Mark Bogosian. Tony started Gig Computers in 1996 while studying computer science at SUNY Albany. It's now one of the largest PC retailers in the region. Tony manages networks for numerous companies and organizations, including this one. Mark is the owner and operator of Castle Mac Service in Latham. With 35 years of experience, Mark offers a range of Macintosh service and tech support. So if you have a tech question, good time to call is right now. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We will get to as many calls as we possibly can. And you can email as well, voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. Tony Yang, welcome back, sir. Happy New Year.
Hey, Happy New Year, Ray. Great to be back. Thank you.
Nice to have you here. Mark Bogosian, Happy New Year to you.
Thank you, Ray. You too, and good to talk to you and Tony.
Great to have you guys here. We'll start with an email that came in prior to showtime, and I guess we throw this one to you, Mark. This is from Teresa. Teresa says, I have a MacBook Air with the latest operating system, Big Sur. My printer is HP DeskJet F4280. At the end of last year, they stopped communicating. I cannot print anything from the computer. My son tried to help me. He removed HP printer driver and installed HP Smart. That didn't work. Then he installed printer driver HP DeskJet series. Cannot communicate with the printer. You got any advice? And I hope the advice is not to buy a new printer. And that is from Teresa.
Well, Teresa, I'm not familiar with that particular model, but I can say if it is older, that is 7, 8, 9 or more years older, it's probably no longer compatible. Big Sur is the very newest operating system that Apple just released about a month ago. They haven't worked out all the bugs, and some of the third-party manufacturers, Epson, Hewlett-Packard, et cetera, may not have caught up with all of the print drivers, although they typically do by now. So all I can say at this point without doing a little deeper R&D is if it's a much older printer, it's probably no longer compatible. The only other thing I can suggest is to delete, actually not just reset, but delete any preferences you have for the printer and reset that connection. Other than that, possibly try it on another computer just to make sure that the printer is not failing on its own.
Or you could buy a new printer. But don't do that, Teresa. Try some other things first. The number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Computers today with Mark Bogosian and Tony Yang. And we go to Rick in Warren County. Rick, you're on.
Hi, good morning. Happy New Year to you all. I am trying to improve my recently installed Asus AC3100 dual-band router. Because I don't believe it's extending out as far as it should be. I thought it got a pretty strong router. So I'm looking at expanding it by connecting it to a D-Link DCR860L. Does that sound reasonable to you?
It's a lot of numbers. Tony?
Yeah. Rick, what is that D-Link thing you're talking about? I understand that Asus is a router. What's the D-Link unit that you're referring to?
That's the previous router that I had.
Oh, that's the previous router. Okay. So you're trying to use both routers simultaneously to kind of extend your wireless range. That's not a bad idea sometimes. Although the newer router will probably kind of overshadow the older one. The important thing is to just get two network cables out to them. So you can use multiple routers, but you don't want to. You know, what a lot of people do, Rick, sometimes is they will use one as a range extender. What that does is it extends the signal, but it also grabs the original signal off a wireless connection, and that's never a good way to go. So you want to hotwire to both of those routers and have them run, you know, have them run simultaneously. That's a workable idea.
Rick.
Well, because I wasn't looking to hardwire. I was looking at putting it in, to obtaining wireless in a dead zone.
Yeah. So when you're trying to daisy chain wireless units from one to the other, it doesn't work as well. It does work, but it doesn't work as well. And when you have different brands trying to work together, that's a tough way to get it to work. They're always making it work, but you have to go through hoops to get that working.
Yeah, that's what I'm learning through right now. It's also been advised on the online that a 2.4 is going to be able to penetrate walls more easily versus 5, megahertz or whatever. And I'm trying to figure out, because my ASUS, my new ASUS, is set to 5, if that's what the problem is, and if I should drop it down to 2.4.
Well, the new routers, especially these AC routers, which is the one that you got, AC3100, it's got both 2.4 and 5.7 gigahertz signals running simultaneously. So you don't want to just choose the 5. You want to just have it run simultaneously. Just pick simultaneous broadcast, and then if your device can pick up the 2.4, it will. When it can do 5.7, it will do the 5.7.
Rick, thank you very much for the call. It's Computers Today with Mark Bogosian and Tony Yang. The number is 800-348-2551. Ben in Williamsburg. Ben, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Happy New Year. I've got a couple of, three total of these just great computers that I've found to be super reliable. We have several of the computers in my house that are like 10 years old. I couldn't tell you the specific operating system, but I'm sure it's some old version of Windows. They are PCs. One of them's getting a little sluggish. It certainly functions completely for what I need, though. You know, when I'm going to like open a video, it might take an extended amount of time. And I had heard tale of something that the average layperson like me can do with a PC to improve performance, as something referred to as defragging. And I'm wondering if you guys could talk about that and let me know if that's something I should be looking more into. I did it years and years ago, though, you know, now it seems to be slowing down a touch, so I wondered about doing it again, and I don't remember how to do it.
Good
as
question.
I had before.
All right, Tony.
Yeah, so defragmentation will only give you an advantage if your hard drive is fragmented. So over time, when you have different data writing and reading, writing, deleting off your hard drive, your operating system puts bits of data all over the place. So what defragmentation does is it pulls all of those fragmented pieces of data and put them right next to each other. So instead of going from the front of from the beginning of your hard drive to the end of the hard drive platter to find the data, it's right next to each other. So that gives you improvement when you have data right next to each other. So it doesn't have to search all over the place for that one bit of data in the data stream. But that only works if your data is fragmented. Now, to use defragmentation, every Windows operating system has it built into it. So you essentially just click on the properties of your hard drive. So whether it's C or D, whatever the drive letter is, if you click on properties, there's a disk tool on there, and defragmentation and disk scan are all built into it.
Okay, so I would just go to properties and then to the hard disk. What will that be listed as? It'll just be
Yeah, so if you go to properties, it will be under a menu that says tools, or it will say disk scan, and then you're going to see something to, you know, to the tune of optimize or defrag hard drive. And when you click on that, that would do that for you automatically.
Ben,
and every single operating system has it.
Thanks, Ben, for the call. Thank you, Tony, for the answer. We'll be right back with Mark Bogosian and Tony Yang. More of your computer questions, 800-348-2551. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. 800-348-2551 is the number. Mark Bogosian handles the Mac service and tech support. Tony Yang will handle your PC questions today. If you have a computer question, call us now. We do have a few emails here at voxpop@wamc.org. And gentlemen, this one from Francesca. Francesca writes, I have an Earthlink email account. It gets full quickly, especially if I'm sent large-sized documents or photos. I want to create and move to another email address, like Gmail, etc., but I want to save my emails from the Earthlink account. How can I do that? And that's from Francesca.
Well, that's a little tricky. Unless you have your email set up in an email client, and I think this is true whether Mac or PC, in an email client like Outlook, Apple Mail, or whatever the PCs use as an alternative, where they are physical files, you may or may not be able to actually move those over to another account. So, for instance, if you have emails in, say, Outlook or Entourage or Apple Mail, one could save those mails. They are physical documents. And then set up a new email address with Google or whatever other email service. And those mails will still remain in that email client. So as long as you're using it, your email, your current Earthlink email, in an email client program versus webmail, you should be able to move those over or maintain those at least.
Tony, you want to add anything?
Yeah, so I mean, at the end of the day, I think the answer to that is yes, absolutely. You can one way or another, you know, one of the ways is what Mark just described, use an email client, export all of your email. And then once you move over to the new account, then import it, and that way all of your old mails will still stay in the same mailbox. So it is doable. It's just the different types of steps that you have to go through to accomplish it.
This one's from John in Pattersonville. John says, 2 or 3 years ago, the computer guys gave a list of what minimum to get in a new computer. I took a note, but didn't buy a new computer. Can they please give an updated list of what they recommend? And let's start with Mark Bogosian, and then we'll go to Tony Yang.
Well, I think far too many people get hung up on processor speeds and that sort of thing. And it's all relative. I tell my clients it's a matter of going 120 miles an hour down the highway or 140 miles an hour down the highway. You're still going to be moving very quickly. I think bigger factors nowadays are storage, especially with the newer generation Macs and PCs that use solid-state drives, SSDs, because they are generally smaller to keep the price point of the new computers down. So many new Macs, for that matter, come with 256 or 512 gigabytes of storage, where older systems, it was quite common where you'd get 1 terabyte or 2 terabytes because they were using older style mechanical drives. So the biggest thing is to get enough storage. Many of us are using cloud services now, to store large files like movies and pictures and music files, so we don't need a lot of local storage. But that's the biggest factor to look at, how much storage, internal storage, your computer has. And second to that would be RAM or memory. Most, I think, typical personal computers, Macs for that matter, come with 8 or 16 gigabytes, unless you're doing some pretty intensive video or audio recording or things like that, you probably don't need more than 8 or 16 gigs.
Tony Yang, do you want to add anything from the PC side of things?
Yep. I think Mark is right on the ball there. You know, the 8 gig memory is pretty common these days. So I've seen ones with 4 gigs of RAM, and you want to make sure you want to get at least 8, particularly for the Windows operating system. 16 would be nice. 16 gigs of RAM would be nice. SSD drive, I feel like these days, is almost a must, because that will make your computer run 10 times faster than a mechanical drive, just on its own. As far as the CPU chip is concerned, I will give a specific recommendation. You want to get at least an i5 on the Intel platform. And if you're going to go with AMD, you want to get the Ryzen 5 or better.
Okay, very good. This one came in from Chris in Cornwall on Hudson. Chris says, I want to donate my old Dell laptop, but it runs Microsoft XP and is full of bugs that prevent me from doing anything on it. Is there any way to wipe out personal files short of taking out the hard drive altogether? And that's from Chris in Cornwall on Hudson.
Yes, I mean, you can't. There's software out there that are designed specifically to wipe every bit of data. So what it does is it does a binary wipe on a drive, but it requires a separate piece of software. Your safest bet, I would just take the hard drive out and put it next to a big magnet for a little while, or have fun, smash on the floor a few times.
Nice.
That would make it very hard for somebody to get data off it. So a couple of routes of going at it.
Okay.
You can
go ahead.
All right.
Keep going.
Yeah. So those are typically the ways that we go at it. Now what we do sometimes for our clients, we will actually hand it over to a place like Elot Recycling. They will destroy the data for the things that you give them. So that's another, there's kind of a commercial route to this as well.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones. Mark Bogosian is here on Tony Yang. It's Computers Today on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. James in Egremont. James, you're on.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering, I'm in the process of building a computer for a combination of, 3D modeling and 3D sculpting. And I believe my question was, is there really any affordable route in terms of having like a GPU and a CPU and RAM levels that actually can work with programs like ZBrush and like Cinema 4D and various like 3D modeling applications? Is there like, am I going to have to spend $1,500 to get a computer that can do that? Or?
I'll let Mark speak on the Mac front of things. On the PC side, I tell you, I have never spent that much money on a video card. Of course, you can pay thousands of dollars for one of these super professional, stuff that they use at the animation studios at Disney, I guess.
Yeah.
But I don't normally recommend those. I've done Adobe Photoshop, AutoCAD, all on a $200-$300 GPU unit, and it seems to work fine for me. So I have a home setup with four CPUs on it, and it's a $200 NVIDIA video card with 2 gigs of RAM on it. It's plenty fast to play any 3D, 4D, 3D games on my computer.
So I
tend to be on the stingy side of things. I don't like to spend too much money on a video card. And they are all so fast these days. I need you're doing some real specific professional work. I would think that a video card in a few hundred dollar range would be sufficient for your needs.
Mark, you want to weigh in?
Excellent.
Well, only to say that you can't really custom build a Mac in that same manner that you can a PC. So there are some options that Apple offers for their iMac Pros, which have limited user expandability, and you don't. Unfortunately, Apple doesn't have the processor box the way you can get in for a Windows machine, where you can add a video card and add this and add that. So. Short of that, I'd say to talk to the software publisher that creates the product that you might be working with and get their input on what, if any, best Mac configuration would be to support their software.
All right, back to the phones we go at 800-348-2551. Tony Yang and Mark Bogosian join us today. Ron is in Clifton Park. Ron, you're up.
Hi, I've got a mid-2011 iMac. And when I go to load a software program to prepare tax returns, it tells me that I have to upgrade to either Mojave or Catalina. I have High Sierra now, and from what I can find, High Sierra is the most I can put on that mid-2011 iMac.
Is there a patch
or some other system that I can use to upgrade to either Mojave or Catalina?
No, unfortunately. There are some patches out there that will allow one to go a little further than the 10.10 or 11 that you can run on that, or even 12, but nothing to properly run Mojave or Catalina or Big Sur. So, unfortunately, the bad news is it's time to move on from that processor, from that computer.
Time for a new computer.
Sorry, Ron.
So, yeah. All right, Ron, yep. Thank you very much. To Stuart in Newburgh. Stuart, you're on.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling about phone security. We all rely on these things so much. We know not to click on an attachment from an email. I accidentally clicked on an attachment for a text message because when people send group texts, they come in as attachments. So you click on them. And I quickly realized that it was something nefarious. It was some porno site. So I closed the thing. But now I wonder whether my phone is infected.
Uh-huh.
So I'm wondering if there's some software I should use to cleanse my phone. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Tony.
Yeah, that's a great question, Stuart. A lot of people, I'm sure, are wondering about it these days. As 5G, comes online and you get much faster speeds and people are going to be using their phones more. So there's a couple of answers to that. One is, yes, there's software that you can put on there just like a computer that will protect your phone. Not a whole lot of people have that on their phones. Places like Symantec, all these big names that you see out there, Trend Micro, Symantec, they all have software for mobile phones. Now, why is it a lot of people are not using it? And this is the other answer. One of the reasons is because the cell phone providers, so AT&T, Verizon, you name them, they all have built-in network protection on their services. So they don't allow certain traffic to get to their network. So you're almost proxy in a way so that you get that first layer of protection just by using a mobile data service. It doesn't work like the regular internet where there's no protection at all. You're on the internet, you're on your own, there's nothing, there's nobody out there, there's no big brother watching out for it and protecting you from getting infected. But mobile providers, because they want to control how much bandwidth people are using, they have a built-in system that will give you that kind of the primary layer of protection. So I don't think you got too much to worry about. If you got no strange things happening in your phone, I think you're okay. But you certainly could go out there and get a anti-spamware, anti-virus protection software for your phone if you choose to do that.
Mark.
Avast on my computers. Do you like that one?
You just say Avast?
Yeah, I use Avast on my computer to scan for viruses.
Yep, Avast is a good software.
Good thing to use for phones.
Sure, Avast is a great company out there. They're one of the bigger places, and their software works. All these softwares work very, very well. There are some specific technical differences, but they all give you a ample amount of protection.
All right, Stuart, thanks a lot for the call. Mark Bogosian is here. Tony Yang is here. We answer your computer questions today, and let's go to Otis, Massachusetts. Tom, you're on.
Hi. I had a. I was asking about how to view a .mov video file that my son sent me from an iPhone. How to view it on my Windows computer, and how to grab a screenshot of it and save the screenshot for use in other documents.
Hmm.
I have always recommend a software on the PC platform called VLC Player. So it's Victor, Lori.
I have that.
That will play the .mov files as well as just about any type of file out there. On your, as far as the screen capture is concerned, on your keyboard, most keyboards will have this. There is a print screen button on there. If you press that and just paste it onto, let's say, Microsoft Paint, which is built into all the operating systems, that will give you your screenshot.
Okay. Thank you. By the way, my Sunday school teacher was Linda Bogosian.
Well, I'll be darned. Any relation, Mark?
Not related, but thanks for the shout-out.
All right, Tom, thanks for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Our friend Jim in Adams, Massachusetts. Jim, your turn.
Hello, yes, thanks for taking my call. Yes, guys, I'm completely computer illiterate, so speak in simple terms for me. I want to burn some CDs and DVDs to send to a friend in Europe, and I need to purchase an external optical drive, and that will handle both systems, the European as well as ours, and software. And I know you can't recommend brand names, but what direction should I be looking in order to do this? This is for a PC. Operating Windows.
So to turn a CD into, the simplest thing for you to do would be to basically package the entire CD content into an ISO file. Then you can just send it to your friend, and then they can either burn it onto a CD or they can watch that right off their devices. Any of the programs out?
They are no more facile than I am, but perhaps their daughter can help them with that. So is that the simplest way? But if I want to get an optical drive anyway, can I go that route and do this in hard and make a hard copy and send it to her in a hard copy?
Oh, I see. Okay. Yes. I mean, you can either have two devices and just copy straight from one to the other, or you can, you know, just use one single drive, make that into ISO, and then burn it onto a CD. So a couple of different routes you can take. Yeah, absolutely. You can copy the content from one CD to another. Although, do keep in mind that some of these CDs and DVDs do have copyright protections built in. In that case, it's a lot more involved.
I'm aware of that. And what about as far as DVDs? Because I know the European systems are a different, slightly different. They have a different language, or they're not always compatible. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Yeah.
I am not. Unfortunately, I am not aware of that. Mark, you have any information on that?
Well, my only recollection is that the software that you might be using, and many external drives do include some type of at least basic software, but I think that's something that's determined as you're burning the disk, whether, you know, it's particularly in a DVD context. So,
yeah, so
I think you set the country code when you're actually creating the media.
Right. So Europe is PAL, and then the U.S. and I think Canada as well as NTSC. But you can get a region free, I think, and it'll play them both.
I remember trying to do something like this a few years ago, and it wanted to change my computer over, but I only had an option to do it changing the computer over like a couple of times. Is that making sense?
Well, again, I think that's something that's more when you play back, as I recall. But if you're creating, I believe that's when you'll specify in your software preferences as you create or burn that DVD.
Hey, Jim, we got to take a break here, but thank you very much. We'll be back in a moment with Tony Yang and Mark Bogosian. The number is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, 800-348-2551. The number, it's Computers Today with Mark Bogosian and Tony Yang. A few emails here, guys, and then we'll get back to the phones. This one's from Sheila. Sheila says, can you talk about what you recommend for security over the internet and what should you do if your Android phone is already compromised? Well, we talked about that a little bit, but Tony, why don't you go first?
So she's asking specifically on mobile devices, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, my answer kind of remains the same. Most mobile devices out there don't have protection on them. They're only running well because the mobile providers provide the first layer of protection. But you can get, you know, things like Symantec, Trend Micro. They all have versions for Android. Yeah. So you can certainly purchase one of those that will give you extra layer of protection.
Now, if your Android phone, she says her Android phone is already compromised. If that was really true, you could wipe your phone, right, completely and just reformat?
Yeah, factory reset it, and that will wipe out everything that's on the phone except what came from the factory. That'll be the best way to go.
This one's from Andrew. Andrew says, this is a hypothetical question, really. Because of COVID, my office is closed, and I now work from home. Work gave me a pretty good laptop. It runs Windows. I'm having the issues of having to go through IT before I can install any type of program on this laptop without administrator approval. So I was wondering, to get around that, can I just install a second operating system on the laptop? And that's from Andrew. Wow, that's pretty good. All right, who wants this one?
I hope Andrew's employer is not listening.
Oh boy,
I was just thinking the same thing, Andrew. We do the same thing as
one of your clients, Tony. Pardon me.
There you go.
Yep. So I was going to say we do that for our clients too. You know, the systems are locked down depending on how strict they want to be, but normally you will need a local administrator access to install software. So that's normal, Andrew, and to get around that is not easy to do. I wouldn't recommend doing that on a work PC.
Okay. This one's from Karen. Karen, subject heading, losing contacts. I have an iPhone and a PC, and my PC keeps deleting contacts that are on my iPhone. Any help would be appreciated. Mark, you go first.
Well, you know, as much as I'd like to malign the PC side of it in this case, I have seen or I have had clients come to me and say, well, my contacts are being deleted here and there for no apparent reason from one device to another. And what I found, not all the time, but frequently enough, is that we have our contacts along with other things like calendars and those types of things tied to some kind of cloud service account. So in the context of Apple, my contacts are tied to my Apple cloud, which therefore show on my computer here, my computer at home, my iPad, and my phone. And if I delete a contact from my phone, it's going to disappear throughout all my devices. So sometimes we accidentally modify or delete a contact on one device, not realizing it's being deleted on the other. Or somebody else might have access, not in a nefarious way, but family member or somebody may unknowingly have access to that same cloud account, and therefore, and this has happened to my clients, Mary deletes contacts from her phone, not realizing that John is sitting in front of his computer watching his contacts disappear. So other than that, I don't know of any other way, especially if you're using the Apple cloud, that contacts would just disappear other than somehow they're being inadvertently deleted on one of the devices that's connected to that account.
Work for you, Tony?
Yeah. I just want to add that sometimes, you know, on the PC side, there's a lot more functions such as archiving, right? So if a setting was on the PC side to archive some of the older things that you have on your iPhone, that wouldn't show up on the PC side. Not that it's disappeared or it's deleted, it's just not visually there when you look at it. So it's just a setting, it's a tweak on a setting to show all the content that's actually there. It's just not showing it to you.
This one's from Matthew in Preston Hollow. All right, this is a long email, so pull up a chair, gentlemen. I bought an Acer Aspire laptop with a Ryzen 5 3500U, good for up to 3.7 gigahertz. It has a Radeon Vega 8 graphics card and 8 gigabytes of RAM. Although I did not purchase it specifically for gaming, it is capable of running a racing simulator that I play casually called iRacing. My question is, what can I do to get my processing speed up to that 3.7 gigahertz? I ran my system's hardware using Cinebench, and after installing updated drivers, etc., it is still sitting at 2.6 gigahertz. I should not be lagging at the lowest settings in the game with what I have, and it happens more frequently when there are other players in the same server. Thanks and Happy New Year. That's from Matthew in Preston Hollow. I'm going to get a drink. You guys answer the question.
So modern processors have what they call a power boost speed. So if you're it's up to your system, the operating system, to determine whether or not it needs to run at the higher megahertz range. So if its determination is that you do not need the higher frequency, it will operate it at the lower frequency. The way to avoid that from happening is you can go into the BIOS of your computer and disable that feature. Mm-hmm. So that it always runs at that higher frequency. The effect of that is it's going to use more energy. You're going to end up having less hours, less battery time on your laptop. On a PC, it doesn't matter as much. It would cost a few dollars more on the electrical bill. But that's why they do it. They do it so that it runs longer. But you can certainly disable that.
All right. This email from Eric in Ulster County. Whenever I listen to the computer experts, I feel totally overwhelmed about my knowledge of computer security. Where can an individual get advice or consultation? And that's from Eric in Ulster County. Mark Bogosian.
Well, I'm sorry, Ray. Could you read that again? Did I fell asleep
during the last question, too. This is from Eric in Ulster County, and we only have a couple of minutes. Now, we are going to special coverage here, guys. I should tell you, since you are not in the studio, we are going to NPR special coverage in just about 4 minutes. Apparently, protesters are storming the Capitol as we speak.
Yes.
NPR is doing live coverage in 4 minutes, and we will take it there. But in the meantime, Eric's question was, whenever I listen to the computer experts, I feel totally overwhelmed about my knowledge of computer security. Where can an individual get advice or a consultation?
So, Eric, like many things, sometimes we fall into a hype rabbit hole and we get too engulfed by the media and things like that about how vulnerable one might be. I think the biggest thing that I see or that I would recommend is to get an antivirus program of some sort, whether Mac or PC, and as Tony has pointed out, there are many different versions out there, and they're all basically good, to protect things from coming into your computer, and do things like change passwords frequently. Be careful who else uses your computer, those types of things. But there are just some basic fundamentals, and the biggest one being antivirus software, so nothing can come into your computer without your knowledge.
All right, we got 2 minutes to go here until we go over to NPR, and I know Mandy in Albany has been waiting for a half an hour. Mandy, you only have about a minute to pose the question, okay?
Sure. Just real quick, I've got an older PC that's running Windows 7, and I was wondering if I can still upgrade it to Windows 10, and if so, what do I do to go about that?
Yep. Windows 10 runs on almost all of the older hardware, so I think you're in good shape there. All you have to do, if you got Windows 7, you can simply go online and do an upgrade right off your PC. So Windows 7 will give you an option. If you log on to Microsoft's site, it will give you an option to purchase the Windows 10 license and and it will automatically actually update your Windows 7 to 10. Most, I would say, the process works very, very well. So you should have problem free with the upgrade.
Okay. Do I need to like back up or anything beforehand?
Always a good idea to back up your data before the upgrade. I've actually never heard of a computer losing all its data because of the upgrade. It might, you might get into a situation where the upgrade doesn't go 100%, but your data will still be there. However, we always recommend back up the data.
Okay, Mandy, thanks a lot. Tony Yang and Mark Bogosian are here only for about another 90 seconds or so. Then we go to NPR. Protesters apparently are storming the Capitol as we speak, and NPR will have live coverage in just about a minute 40. Very quickly, Mark, this email from Paula: my iPad OS 14.2 will not stay signed in. I constantly have to re-enter my Apple ID password. Also, web pages in Safari keep crashing. Are these two symptoms related, and how can I stop them? And you get 35 seconds.
Well, the only thing I can recommend is to do a complete restoration. Back up either using the cloud or another computer, wipe it out, reinstall the iOS, and then re-enter your Apple account credentials.
Is that a common thing to happen, Mark?
No, it isn't. But there, that's the next logical step is to redo the iPad's operating system.
All right. Well, I think we'll leave it there. Tony Yang, how do people find Gig Computers on the internet?
We're at GigSystems, GIGSystems.com.
And Mark Bogosian, how do we find Castle Mac Service?
CastleComp.com or Google Mac Service Albany, and you'll find us.
All right, this is a foreshortened program, and I want to thank you both for being here. We are going to take it to special coverage in about 30 seconds. NPR has the very latest from our nation's capital. Things are going on. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Matt Plummer took the calls. Our producer, Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we're going to talk UFOs with SUNY physicist Kevin Knuth. That's tomorrow at 2. Right now, we go to special coverage.
was, for that era, normal for hard labor. A beer, I think, was 10 cents, and a loaf of bread, 15 cents. So comparatively, it wasn't too bad. The ice harvest was a week or 10 days of a constant involvement and camaraderie.
More on ice harvesting in future programs. To hear about our new CD, please visit pulseplanet.com. Pulse of the Planet is made possible by the National Science Foundation. I'm Jim Metzner.
And you're listening to WAMC Northeast Public Radio. The time's 2:55. We are expecting to be in special coverage from National Public Radio at this time, as we see some startling pictures out of the nation's capital on this day, when a joint session of Congress met to ratify Joe Biden's Electoral College victory. Early on in those proceedings, protesters outside of the Capitol got closer and closer to barricades, and video outside of the Capitol showed some skirmishes. There were reports, unsubstantiated at this point, of tear gas, possibly shots fired. We've been seeing social media posts from members inside the Capitol who have been wearing masks and also escorted to safer places. Report that Vice President Mike Pence, who was to oversee today's joint session, was rushed to a safe location. This all follows today a rally by President Donald Trump and his supporters nearby the Capitol. After that rally wrapped up, coinciding with the timing of the joint session, protesters made their way to the U.S. Capitol and have since been standing off with officials there. There's been a curfew called for Washington, D.C. for 6 p.m. Today. In the meantime, folks inside the Capitol on this most important day have been told to barricade in place. What we can tell you at this hour is that members of Congress inside the House chamber were told by police to put on gas masks after tear gas was dispersed in the rotunda. As these skirmishes by supporters of President Trump continued outside, the protesters breached the U.S. Capitol, violently clashing with law enforcement as lawmakers gathered inside to formalize again President-elect Joe Biden's victory in November's presidential election. Law enforcement told lawmakers to retrieve masks from under their seats. As the clashes continued, the Capitol building was placed on lockdown as Trump supporters marched through evacuated public spaces in the building. Trump first egged on the protests, then tweeted to supporters to stay peaceful and respect law enforcement as they continued to breach the Capitol building. And we're going to play you some sound now from Vermont Congressman Peter Welch, the Democrat at large, that he posted to his Twitter account in the last few minutes about what the sound is like right now inside the Capitol.
Capitol Police just announced that there was a breach. Somebody or some people got into the building past security. So they've locked the chamber in the House and they've locked the chamber in the Senate. Everything seems safe, but they're taking no chances. We were just told that there has been tear gas in the rotunda, and we're being instructed to each of us get a gas mask that are under our seats.
Again, Vermont Congressman Peter Welch posting to social media within the last few minutes, explaining what's going on in the Capitol as protesters have breached the Capitol after today's rally by President Donald Trump and supporters. At the same time that a joint session of Congress in the early days of this 117th Congress were set to ratify the Electoral College results showing Joe Biden has won the presidential election. Lawmakers were evacuated from the Capitol. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and other senators were led out, escorted by staff and police. Members of the House were also evacuated after those chambers came together. It came just after President Trump addressed thousands of supporters and riled up the crowd with baseless claims of election fraud. You're listening to WAMC. What we're going to do now is take you to special coverage from National Public Radio for more on this developing story.
Officials on this as they watch all of this unfold?
Well, there certainly is bipartisan condemnation from the very lawmakers who are currently evacuated from where they were in the Capitol. As you would note, there was a joint session of Congress that had then moved to their individual chambers to debate the election outcome. the vice president had to be evacuated. Everyone ultimately had to be evacuated from the chambers. And lawmakers from both parties are tweeting, asking for peace.
And you are listening to NPR News.
Yeah.